A loaded word is one that provokes a strong negative emotional reaction in a particular individual. Frequently, such words are abstract. That is, they don't actually describe anything specific, but they do intensify feelings. For example, I've been called upon to help a good number of people who experienced child abuse in various forms. Often the only good that can be found is the fact that they survived, and this may not be enough of a positive focus to affect a healing. If you cannot find a sufficiently strong positive focus, another approach is to weaken the negative focus. In every case I've found where the effect of child abuse is an ongoing problem, there is always an emotionally loaded recall of the event or events. Regardless of whether or not this may be justified, if it isn't helping the person, then it doesn't need to be maintained. In one typical case, a woman described her experience like this. My father violated me. He destroyed my self-esteem with his abuse, and then he abandoned me. Translated into a skinny description, it came out like this. My father touched me where and when I didn't want him to. I didn't like it. He left, and I never saw him again. The facts are the same, but they are reduced to the bare essentials without the loaded words. The new description may lack the charge of righteous anger, but on the other hand, it doesn't keep increasing tension. By consistently using this new description of her experiences, the woman in question soon was able to change many habits that had prevented her from moving toward the success and happiness she wanted. To translate something into a skinny description, first, remove all the adjectives you can. Then change any other emotionally stimulating words into their neutral equivalents, while keeping the basic facts the same. Creative translation. My favorite definition of truth is this. Truth is. If you assume that the universe is infinite, then anything you add to that statement would also be true, including anything you make up. Thus, each individual decides what is true and what is not, based on his or her own background, experience, habits, beliefs, and inclinations. A fact has been described as an opinion that two or more people agree on. Whenever something happens, it is interpreted, and often the interpretation is treated as a fact itself. You may say, the sky is blue. That seems obvious at first, but a scientist may say, no, the sky is colorless, and what you see is the blue end of the spectrum of refracted sunlight. And then a mystic may say, there is no sky. That's an illusion. Anything can be interpreted in any way one chooses. Where healing is concerned, interpretation can be critical because the treatment of a symptom is usually determined by an interpretation of its cause. The value of an interpretation for healing purposes is how well it aids the healing. You can interpret symptoms and conditions in any way you like, or you can go along with the interpretation of a trusted authority. However, from a very practical point of view, the most useful interpretation of unhealthy symptoms and conditions I have found is that they are all related to levels of internal stress, physical, emotional, mental, and spiritual. The advantage of this interpretation is that you can immediately start working on something by whatever means and with whatever help you have available. Additionally, it tends to relieve a lot of fear and helplessness and allows you to incorporate any form of treatment in the healing process. Whether you use this interpretation or not, remember that you can choose an interpretation that will make you feel helpless, or you can choose one that will increase your effectiveness. To cite a specific example, there was a time when I came down with what the doctor diagnosed as advanced pneumonia. I chose to interpret it as the result of severe internal stress. I still took the antibiotics she prescribed because I knew they would help me relieve the stress. I also used a lot of other approaches and techniques, but all with the intent to relieve the stress. The final effect was that in 3 weeks, the pneumonia symptoms were completely gone, and I felt better than I had in years. Healing by affirmation. Affirmations are statements you make that sound like facts, but which may or may not be true in the present moment. The objective is to say them in such a way that they become facts, or to reinforce facts that are only weakly believed. Affirmations are often treated like magical spells, but they only have the same power as other words. They help to keep your attention focused on what you want. A successful affirmation is one that is incorporated by your body as a belief. A very successful affirmation is one which helps your body to do what it knows how to do. The ones we're interested in now are those that help your body to heal itself. Many affirmations fail because they're too abstract or intellectual. The body just can't relate to them. There's a world of difference in the effect of an affirmation such as this. Universal energy is flowing through me now and my body is perfect in every way. And an affirmation such as this. Every day, in every way, I'm feeling better and better. Universal energy and perfect in every way are not part of most people's experience, but the body understands feeling better very well. A good affirmation calls on the body's memory to evoke or strengthen existing skills. I am healthy is too abstract, unless the word healthy evokes a very specific memory. And feeling as good as I did when I used to play basketball is very good, especially if you did play basketball and did feel good while doing it. You can also make reinforcing affirmations, such as, my body knows how to get rid of cancer cells, and it's doing so now. My body remembers how to move this arm, and it does it well. How many times do you do an affirmation? As many times as it takes to get an effect. An affirmation is not like taking vitamins once a day. It's more like developing a new habit of mind that translates into a new habit of the body. The more quickly you want the effect, the more often you need to focus on what you want. Let's explore some variations on basic affirmative statements. Similes. Wonderful healing effects can come from using similes that call up familiar memories. My mind is as calm as a mountain lake. My body relaxes like a resting cat. My skin is as clear as my mom's glass table. The act of comparing such memories to effects that you want evokes a body response in the direction of simulating those effects. When you compare yourself to a resting cat, the body tries to relax like the cat. The better, stronger, or more pleasurable the memory, the better the response. Metaphors. The body responds powerfully to imagery, and words are excellent tools for evoking images that will assist a healing. A metaphor is a phrase that describes a symbol, most effectively in the form of a memory enhanced by imagination, which likens one thing to another. For example, I am a tree full of life and strength. My roots receive nourishment from the earth. My leaves receive energy from the sun. I am a tree full of life and strength. A metaphor like this can stimulate the body to start making itself the human equivalent of a strong and healthy tree. Anything that has qualities or characteristics that you admire can be used for metaphorical healing. Rapidisms. A rapidism is a type of affirmation that consists of repeating a short word or phrase over and over again, very rapidly, until a change occurs. The first time I used this was on a chairlift at a ski resort when my hands were freezing. I imagined a fire in a fireplace and said to myself, my hands are warm, my hands are warm, my hands are warm, my hands are warm, for about 5 minutes, and my hands got toasty warm. Since then, I've used rapidism for a lot of minor ailments as well as emotional states and mental qualities, and it works very well. In workshops, I have people silently repeat, I'm feeling good, for 1 minute, and they're always amazed at the results. I don't know how well it would work on major illnesses, but in theory it should help, and it certainly won't hurt. Radical affirmations. Radical affirmations take a lot of courage because you'll be saying something that is clearly not true. I first learned this from a man who used it for his asthma. He had tried every conventional and alternative approach available, and nothing had helped him. Finally, he got so frustrated, he decided to tell himself, I do not have asthma. I never have had asthma. I never will have asthma. He broke all the rules of good affirmations. But he kept it up every day all day long for 6 months, and at the end of that time, his asthma was gone. You may notice that he used a negative in every sentence. Some people say the subconscious doesn't hear negatives, which is silly, because it hears everything. What they probably mean is that saying, "I don't have asthma," is like saying, "Don't think of a pink elephant." In order not to think of it, you have to think of it. Maybe that's why it took 6 months for the man's body to get the message. Even so, the important thing is that with intensive repetition, what started off as a lie became a truth. That statement deserves a little more attention. Certain people have trouble with affirmations because they feel as though they're lying to themselves, even with the most simple kinds of statements. They may ask, "How can I say I'm feeling good when I'm not?" This is a problem with interpretation and intent. If you interpret an affirmation as a lie and think you're trying to trick your body into getting well, that's bad, and it won't work. If you interpret healing affirmations as guidelines and think you're trying to help your body get well, that's good, and it will work. Healing by direction. Directions are commands, orders, or instructions that you give to your body. In this case, instead of giving your body a statement, you tell it what to do and, in some cases, how to do it. You are probably already familiar with the idea if you've ever told yourself to relax or stay calm. You could also say heal or get well or feel good. The really amazing thing is that to the degree you give your directions with confident expectations and give them right at the onset of symptoms, your body will respond faster than you thought possible. Many times my body has started to produce cold symptoms, back pain, muscle pain or stiffness, nausea or headache, and all I've had to say is, "Stop that," or "Drop that," and the symptoms have instantly gone away. One time my wife began to get serious flu symptoms, and she said, "You stop that, body. I don't have time for that, so you just stay healthy." And the symptoms disappeared instantly. Of course, my wife is a strong woman, and I'm not surprised that her body obeyed without hesitation. I would have too. Short directions are fine, but you can be more creative than that. As with affirmations, directions will work better if they evoke some kind of visual image. "Okay, body, I want you to jazz up the immune system, get those lymphocytes in there and clean out the rubbish, and make sure those antibodies clean up and keep out the invaders. I want an immune system that's in good working order. You know what to do. If you need any supplies, just ask. Call on the brain for anything you need. Just get the job done. Thanks a million." You don't have to be formal with your own body. Healing by indirect directions. These are simply pairs of words designed to direct your body's attention to memories or images that will help produce beneficial sensations and feelings. Some examples are water flowing, rain dripping, cool breezes, warm sunshine, ice melting, snow falling, birds singing, lions roaring. They have the best effect when said slowly with a pause afterward, giving time for the image to form itself. If you like, you can add more imagery such as birds singing in a garden when the sun comes out after a rain. They are really just brief descriptions of evocative moments, and the body responds to them by creating the associated feelings and sensations. For more specific effects, focus the conscious attention on a particular part of the body while doing this. Think ice melting, for instance, while you hold your attention on an area of tension in your body. Healing by blessing. Blessings are words that have the effect of increasing one's focus of awareness or intent. There are two kinds of blessings, affirmational or directional. Affirmational blessings are like compliments. They can take the form of appreciation, as in, "Thank you," acknowledgement, as in, "Good job," and admiration, as in, "You sure are a clever body." Both you and your body are motivated to repeat and improve behavior that brings pleasure. And compliments feel good. You can bless your body for regrowing cells, mending wounds, breathing, circulating blood, cleansing itself, cooperating with medicine or other intervention, and whatever you can acknowledge as a good action on its part. It may seem a bit strange at first to say thank you to your own body for doing something that is natural to it. However, a great deal of experience by a great many people has shown that the more you consciously appreciate what your body does, the more it does of what you appreciate, and the better it does it. Essentially, you are rewarding good behavior, and this is always the best way to train animals and children, as well as bodies. In showing appreciation, mentally or vocally, don't be afraid to be extravagant either. Hey, you lost 2 pounds. That's great. Keep it up. Praise is its own reward. I know it sounds peculiar, but your body really does like to be praised. To use this for healing, you praise every single tiny itsy-bitsy movement in the direction of the healing that you want. And you rigorously refrain from ever, ever criticizing your body for not doing a good enough job. The results may or may not be immediately apparent, but over a period of time, you will start to notice definite improvements. You don't have to limit yourself to blessing your body. Just as your body responds to a metaphor, so it will respond to a blessing or compliment that you give to anyone or anything. It's as if your body takes every compliment you give personally and feels better and does better because of it. In a variation I call saturation blessing, you bless every good thing you can remember and every good thing around you without a break for as long as you can sustain it. If you do take a break, you go back to the blessing as soon as you can. One man I introduced to this technique was able to rid himself of a long-time pattern of asthma in less than a week, and I used it myself to heal a knee injury in less than 15 minutes. Can you use blessings for emotional healing? Yes, but in this case you show appreciation to your own mind for noticing any good in yourself, the world, or other people, and for any positive displays of mental abilities or faculties. For example, hey, mind, you solved that problem very well. Thank you for noticing the beauty of those flowers. Or, it's good that you're able to forgive that person at least a little bit. And so on. The effect of this is to lower mental stress, thereby making emotional conflicts easier to resolve. This might even seem stranger than talking to your body, but it works, even if you never figure out who's doing the blessing. Directional blessing can be compared to wishing someone well. Bon voyage is a directional blessing, as is bon appetit, and enjoy. May the wind be always at your back is part of an Irish blessing for good fortune on a journey, and get well cards are a form of directional blessing for health. To apply this kind of blessing for self-healing in the most effective way, you use the form, do this so that. To your body, you might say, take this medicine and use it to help strengthen our immune system so that we can feel stronger and enjoy a walk in the woods. To your mind, you might say, settle down and keep your attention on the present moment so that we can feel more peaceful and think more clearly. The exact wording is up to you, but the essential part is to tell your body or mind what you want it to do and then give it a good reason for doing it. Healing by self-hypnosis. The power of hypnosis is not some mysterious form of thought control that the hypnotist has. It is the power of authority, imagination, and words to direct one's focus. It is said sometimes that certain people cannot be hypnotized. This is simply not true, because hypnosis is no more than a state of relaxed focus in which a person is open to suggestions related to something they want to do, be, or have. All you have to do to hypnotize someone is to get their attention on something they're interested in. A person watching a soap opera they like on television is just as much in a hypnotic trance as someone in a hypnotherapist's office. Hypnosis can be either guided or self-directed. The only difference between self-hypnosis and hypnosis guided by someone else is that in the former, you have to be both the guide and the subject. Some people find it easier to let someone else do the work while they just relax and respond. Others feel they need the authority of someone else to help them focus and take in the suggestions. Otherwise, self-hypnosis is just as effective. Self-hypnosis can be used for a myriad of ailments, from lack of energy to sinus problems. Without all the fancy trimmings, the basic elements of self-hypnosis include 1. Relaxing your body. 2. Closing your eyes. 3. Focusing your attention on something. 4. Relaxing your body some more. 5. Giving or receiving suggestions. 6. Giving yourself post-hypnotic suggestions. And 7. Opening your eyes and being aware of your surroundings. Using this process, you can perform some good therapeutic hypnosis in as little as a minute, though you can take as long as you want. Responding to hypnosis is a skill, just as meditation is a skill. Some people learn how to do it and gain the benefits very quickly, while others have to practice a lot. You'll know how skillful you are when you start to get results. It took me a good while to learn it well, and it has become one of the most valuable skills I have. Sometimes the results are instant, sometimes rapid or fast, and sometimes, when there's a lot of emotional clutter to deal with, it takes a lot of time and persistence. Nevertheless, it is definitely a skill worth developing. Another valuable source of instant healing is the imagination. Imagination is one of the greatest abilities we have, because we can imagine what was, what is, and what isn't. What the mind does well is imagine, and imagination affects the body. So if you use your imagination skillfully, you can help the body to heal itself. Let's explore a number of different techniques that heal with the power of imagination. Healing by intentional reverie. The deliberate use of memory to elicit a healing response in the body is a sadly neglected area of healing practice. Healers rely on the body's memory, whether they realize it or not, but very few use it on purpose. Ignoring memory as a resource when you need healing is akin to trying to build a house without any reference to basic principles of construction. Of course, you can do it, but you're making it a lot harder than it has to be. Everyone has experienced times of wellness and times of illness, at least relatively speaking. I believe that the body remembers every single detail of those experiences right down to the cellular level. No one knows if this is actually true, but I do know this. If you imagine that the body can remember everything, then it acts like it can. While I was doing hypnotherapy, I found that one of the best ways to aid the healing of a wide variety of complaints was to help a person recall a time when the complaint didn't exist, and or a time when the person was in a high state of health. The key to the healing effect was a vivid recreation of the memory. That does not just mean visual images. The body remembers visual data as well as every other sort of sensory data imaginable. A man I worked with suffered from what is now called fatigue syndrome. He was in a perpetual state of low energy and could barely even make it to my office. He said that medicine and counseling hadn't helped, so he figured, what the heck, why not try me? Well, we got his energy back in one session. In talking about his past, he mentioned that he had been pretty good at basketball, so I helped him to recall his best game. For a first session, I had him remember the sights and sounds, smells, touches, feelings, and movements involved in preparing for the game, playing the game, winning the game, and celebrating the win in the greatest detail possible. By the end of the session, he was full of energy and feeling better than he had in a long time. There was more to his problem than that, however. The issues in his life that caused the stress that led to the fatigue took longer to resolve. But when he needed energy, he could recall the game and be charged up again in practically no time. In using this technique yourself, first assume or imagine that your body can remember everything. Then take some time and deliberately recall every detail that you can bring up of a time when you didn't have the problem you have now, or when you felt really good, or when you had been healed of something similar. Be sure to include all of your senses in your recall, especially any physical movement that may have been involved, such as walking, running, dancing, or a change of posture, and positive emotional feelings. Because memory works by association, you may remember apparently unrelated bits and pieces at first. These will normally be the elements with the strongest sensory content, including emotions. Keeping your attention on them will help lead you to more detail. The aim of this exercise is to recall memories that will help you evoke the health and healing responses that the body holds in memory and activate them in the present moment. Do this until you start to feel or experience changes in your condition, no matter how small. Then you can continue if you have the time, or plan another time for doing it again. You are not looking for miracles, although you should be prepared to accept them if they happen. You're looking for any changes for the better, because that indicates progress. There may be other areas of your life that you will also have to work on to reduce your overall stress, but this technique will be a great help in mobilizing your body's healing resources. Interior redecorating. Some years ago, I read a book that impressed me very much. It was Using Your Brain for a Change by Richard Bandler, well known for his system of neurolinguistic programming. In it, Bandler described a method for what I would call instant emotional healing that involved recalling a memory and changing various aspects of it, such as brightness, color, size, sound volume, and so forth, without actually changing the content of the memory itself. The idea, as I interpret it, is that memories are stored as patterns of experience and emotional charge. Experience provides the content, and emotional charge determines the packaging. For example, important memories, whether good or bad, are remembered by many people as being brighter or bigger than other memories. Bandler discovered that consciously making such memories dimmer or smaller usually resulted in a permanent change in emotional and/or behavioral response to them. Reactions and behavior based on unhappy memories were changed in virtually the flick of a thought. I taught the process to students in my workshops, and it worked very well. It was, however, tedious to work through a whole group of visual, auditory, and kinesthetic cues. So I experimented with variations that eventually led me to the idea that whatever you do to alter the mood of the memory will alter your reaction to it. And that led me to interior redecorating. Let me explain the three most universally successful applications of this idea: circus decor, scene change, and flash freeze. First, circus decor. Recall a memory in which someone has really upset you or hurt you emotionally. Without changing the event, put antlers on the person involved, and dress him or her in a clown costume. Have some other clowns come into the picture behind the person and make faces, while circus music plays in the background. When you're ready, drop the memory for a few moments, and then recall it again with the changes you've made. Usually, your feelings about the event will have changed, and this memory will no longer bother you like it did, as long as you always recall it with the changes. Soon, you will probably even stop bothering to recall it. Second, scene change. Recall an unhappy or unpleasant memory. Without changing the event itself, change the context by placing it in a location that contrasts as much as possible with the mood of the event. If it's a noisy event, put it in the middle of the desert or in a quiet mountain meadow. If it's a quiet event, put it in the middle of Times Square on New Year's Eve, Any peaceful or happy surroundings will usually work well, as long as you can maintain the mood of the surroundings in your recall. And third, flash freeze. Recall an unhappy or unpleasant memory. Freeze it into a thin sheet of ice. As your current self, step up with a hammer and break up the sheet into little pieces. Sweep the ice into a bucket and set it out into the sun to evaporate or on a fire to boil away. Healing by radical recall. There is a way of consciously working with memories that can have dramatic effects on physical healing. It's very easy to do, and it's also very hard, depending on how you relate to memories. I call it radical because it consists of changing the content of the memory. In essence, imagining that it happened differently. This might seem like denial or escapism at first, but the intent and the process are quite different. It's well known that nearly all of the cells of the body regularly die and are replaced by new cells. As I understand it, the brain cells don't actually die, but their contents are replaced. In any case, the body you have today is, physically and literally, not the same body you had last year. It is common to say that your body replaces itself every 7 months or so, but that is misleading. Actually, different parts and organs of your body replace themselves at different rates. It is said that your skin, for example, replaces itself completely every 6 weeks. But this statement is also misleading because individual cells and groups of cells are dying and being replaced by new cells every day. Fortunately, skin cells are replaced by skin cells. Liver cells are replaced by liver cells. Bone cells are replaced by bone cells, and so on. The new cells know what kind of cells they are supposed to be. How? By memory, of course. Thus, if the cells of your body are damaged by injury or disease, and the damage lasts beyond the normal time for the cells of that area to die and be replaced, the only way that can happen is because new cells carry on the memory of the damage. Therefore, if you can find a way to provide the new cells with a memory of not being damaged, they will form without the damage. That's the theory, anyway. However, there's a hole in that theory. In practice, the cells can change faster than the time it's supposed to take for new cells to be born. Okay, so it's not a perfect theory. I'm still working on it. Now I would like to give you some examples of radical recall. In one case, a friend of mine was suffering from a weeping wound that was 3 months old. When getting off a motorcycle, she had burned her bare leg by hitting the hot manifold, causing the wound. She had tried a variety of medicines, but nothing seemed to help. Because radical recall was cheaper than a visit to a doctor, she decided to try it first. So one day she sat down and recalled the incident when she was getting off the motorcycle. Only this time she changed the memory so that when she got off the motorcycle, her leg didn't touch the manifold. It wasn't easy, of course, because the memory of what had actually happened was very strong. But she persisted. She reworked the memory 40 times until she could easily remember getting off the cycle without brushing her leg against the manifold. Nothing happened right away, so she just forgot about it. Within 3 days, however, the wound had healed up completely, which qualifies it as a fast healing. Another case of healing by radical recall concerns a student of mine. I debated with myself as to whether I should even mention this because it sounds so far out, but it did happen, so here goes. This person was a fireman in a major city. His crew was called out to put out a fire in a warehouse, and he was in the process of spraying water into a storeroom, when the stream of water hit a pool of burning oil that he hadn't seen. The force of the water caused the oil to ricochet against a wall and splash back on the fireman, burning his face, his hair, and his arms. The burns were bad, especially on his arms, but he refused treatment and decided to go straight home. As he left, his friends joked about his frizzy hair. Once he was home, he washed, drank some water, and did a radical recall 4 times in a row in which he was in the same place, doing the same thing, except that in the new version of the memory, the oil missed him completely. Then he went to bed. In the morning, he got up, noticed that his arms looked fine, combed his hair, and noticed some burnt hair coming out in his comb, and went back to the station. He was greeted by gasps of surprise and wonder. His friends made him look into a mirror, and he saw that his hair and his face looked normal. This was a good case of rapid healing. The story is somewhat remarkable, but I'll be the first to acknowledge that this person did have an extremely vivid imagination. Now I'll share one of my own experiences. As I've studied my body's reaction to events in my life, I found a direct correlation between cold sores and the suppression of anger. In particular, if I get angry with someone and keep quiet about it, both internally as well as externally, I tend to get a cold sore in my lip. I know they're supposed to be caused by viruses, but perhaps the tension of the suppressed anger prevents my body from taking care of the virus on its own. Whatever. What I know with certainty is that if I do something to relieve the tension, the cold sore goes away. If I'm aware of being angry with a particular person, the process is easier. In one dramatic incident, I got a bad cold sore and I knew with whom I was angry. In front of a mirror, I imagined that I had not suppressed my anger, but that instead I had told the person how angry I was and what I wanted him to do about what had upset me. I think I did this 3 or 4 times in a row. The reason I'm not sure is that I was distracted by watching the cold sore fade away from my lip in less than a minute. Now that is instant healing. Radical recall requires a willingness to change a memory, the use of as much sensory detail as possible in the recreation of the event, and sufficient repetition to stabilize it as a new memory that the body will respond to. The amount of repetition varies for individuals because it seems to be dependent on how vivid, sense-laden, and emotionally stimulating you can make the recreation. I don't know what its limitations are, so experiment freely. There needs to be a lot more experimentation and more experience with it to understand it better. Healing by healthy fantasy. An exercise I used to do in my workshops was to have everyone turn their head to the right as far as they could, and pick a spot to look at that marked how far they had turned. Then I had them face front and close their eyes and imagine that they were an owl, able to easily turn their head around 180 degrees with no effort. I had them imagine doing that without actually turning their head, and then I had them open their eyes and turn their head to the right again. Almost always, 100% of the class found that they could turn their head much farther the second time. So what happened? The body is constantly reacting to the mind. Every thought, idea, image, daydream, nightdream, plan, or fantasy produces a physical effect according to what the mind is doing. Just the thought of getting up to get something to drink activates the muscles that would be involved, and the appropriate chemical reactions, perhaps including salivation, that would relate to the actual experience. If you think a lot of stressful or conflicting thoughts, your body can go haywire trying to act on every one of them. However, if you can make your body go haywire by what you think, then you can also make it healthy. Another workshop exercise I did was to guide my students through a fantasy experience. Most often, I had them imagine that they were on a sailing ship anchored in the lagoon of a South Pacific island in the 19th century. During the less than 5-minute exercise, I had them see, hear, feel, smell, and taste in great detail. Then I had them open their eyes and reorient themselves to the classroom again. Next, I asked them to recall a vacation, a trip, or a party that they had experienced some time in the previous year. Then I had them recall the lagoon experience, then the real experience, then the lagoon, then the reality. Finally, I asked if anyone could tell me the difference between the two experiences as memories, regardless of content. Except in cases where the real experience or the lagoon experience was exceptionally emotional, no one could. Then I had them compare the lagoon memory to a memory of lunch 2 weeks ago, Tuesday. In this case, unless that particular lunch was especially traumatic or joyful, the lagoon memory seemed more real. It turns out that the body doesn't determine reality by the same rules that the mind uses. As far as the body is concerned, reality is determined by sensory stimulation, and it isn't particular about where that stimulation comes from. A highly emotional reaction to an ordinary event will have a greater influence on the body's ongoing behavior than a lukewarm reaction to an extraordinary event. And a really good fantasy can change the body in ways that mundane experience may not be able to. Personally, I can keep my body in much better shape with exciting fantasy exercises than I can with boring physical ones, as long as my fantasies have a high degree of sensory stimulation in them. Really effective, healthy fantasy involves making up experiences that are either highly unlikely or, in terms of ordinary reality, utterly impossible, but which contain a large degree of intense sensory stimulation related to healing. Here are some of my favorites. Magnificent massage. When I'm home, I spend a lot of time at my computer, and if I get too involved for too long a time, my neck and shoulder muscles get stiff and sore. One of the quickest ways to take care of this is to imagine, with great attention to detail, that I'm getting a neck and shoulder massage from a favorite actress or model. This can ease all the tension in less than a minute. Of course, I always have the option of having them do a more extended massage if I choose. Although I have great respect for the art of real therapeutic massage, my fantasy masseuses do a better job than most of the ones I've been to, because I can imagine exactly what I want and how I want it. Techno-fantasy. One time I was in bed with a bad chest cold, so I conjured up a team of scientists from the future, who set up a healing apparatus over my bed and zapped my chest with an energy ray, complete with spacey sound effects. I also imagined that I could feel the ray penetrating my chest and dispersing the congestion. Not only was it great fun, but I was able to breathe easily and go back to work within half an hour. On another occasion, my oldest son challenged me to arm wrestling at a time when he was working out and I was desperate. There was no question that he would be able to beat me under ordinary circumstances. So I created extraordinary circumstances. As he told me later, he was using a martial arts technique to send a powerful flow of water through his arm to increase his strength. I suspected as much, so I imagined a band around my wrist that was attached to a rod in the direction I wanted to go, both band and rod made of titanium steel and connected to a miniature nuclear engine at the end of the table. Well, flowing water didn't stand a chance against that. When I turned on the engine and put his arm down on the table without any apparent effort, he reacted with great shock and surprise. In fact, that event didn't have anything to do with healing, but the same concept can be used to increase strength and endurance, speed up healing processes, or make repairs to the body. All you need to do is to be able to imagine a technology that, if it existed, could do what you want. I found that this works best when you use it to do something positive instead of trying to use it against something or to try and get rid of something. For instance, my healing ray filling my chest with light wasn't directed at destroying the illness. The nuclear engine wasn't working against my son's arm. It was simply pulling my arm and took my son's arm with it. If you use a techno-fantasy device to repair your body, keep it focused on the result you want and not on the illness or disease or condition that you don't want. As with every technique, sometimes you get quick results and sometimes you have to keep doing it for a while. Fantastical magic. Some people are not into technical stuff and would rather play with magical imagination. This works just as well as long as you put enough sensory data into it. A long time ago, I led a series of role-playing games for a group of teenage boys in my neighborhood. One of the boys usually played the role of a druid with magical powers. He came down with chickenpox and had to leave the game for a while, but he returned sooner than anyone had expected. As he told us later, he was lying on his bed at night feeling miserable when he suddenly thought, "Hey, I'm a druid. I can make this stuff go away by magic." He knew he was just playing, but he made up a spell and ordered his spots to fly off his body and stick to the ceiling, seeing that happen in his mind's eye at the same time. Then he smiled to himself and went to sleep. The next morning, the chickenpox was gone. There were, however, no spots on the ceiling. The key factor was that, even though he was doing it for fun, he didn't actually deny or doubt what he was doing. Just a few moments ago, my body was feeling out of sorts because of stress and lack of sleep. So to go along with reading this section, I got a glass of water and pretended that I was casting a magical spell on it to turn it into a healing potion. I said the magical words, "Abracadabra, sisboombee, turn into a healing potion for me," and I imagined the water becoming all bubbly and golden. Then I drank some of it and imagined I could feel the potion going through my body and making it feel better. Right now, I feel great. Healing by symbolic logic. One of the most amazing instant healing techniques of all has to do with the use of inner symbols. It's possible to turn this into a very complex procedure, but I'm going to give you the simple version that usually works just as well. First, I'll explain the concept and the process, then I'll give some examples. I said earlier that the body judges reality by the intensity of sensory experience, and not by whether the experience happens outside your body or inside your mind. In addition, the body can respond to symbols of a condition as strongly as it can to the condition itself. That's why dreams can have such a powerful influence on health, and also why an encounter with something associated with an event can reproduce the effects of the event. Some people get allergic reactions when looking at a picture of a cat. Some people get depressed when they hear a bit of music that was playing when something bad happened. Some people get drunk from non-alcoholic drinks that they think contain alcohol. Some people smile when they smell a particular fragrance. In all of these cases, something unrelated became a symbol for an experience, and the body reacted to the symbol when the experience itself wasn't happening. The responses I'm describing are suggestive of simple behavioral conditioning, as when Pavlov's dog heard a bell every time he was fed, and then learned to salivate when there was really only a bell and no food. Ah, but there's a very clever way to turn the use of symbols into a healing technique. If the body reacts to a particular experience, and you change the experience, then the body changes its reaction. And if the body reacts to a symbol as if it were the real experience, and you change the symbol, then the body also changes its reaction to the experience, as if it too had changed. Because the body doesn't care if the symbol is external or internal, providing it's vivid enough, you can imagine a symbol of the experience or condition and change the symbol to get a healing effect. When my mother was alive, there was a time when she was having chest pains. I asked her to tell me what it felt like, that is, what did she think could cause a pain like that. She immediately said that it felt like a big box of books was sitting on her chest. So, I told her to imagine a couple of big, husky Hawaiians coming over to lift it off her chest, and I had her repeat that as a detailed experience 3 times. By the end of the 3rd run-through, a few minutes later, the pain was all gone. Days later, she told me that her doctor had found tumors in her chest before I had seen her, but when she was checked after the box of books technique, the tumors were no longer there. Many times, people I've been with have had headaches, and they've told me that it felt like their head was in a vise. So, I told them to imagine that there really was a vise there, and to imagine that they could reach up and loosen it. In almost every case, after repeating it three times to set the experience in memory, the headache was relieved. Similarly, people have told me that they had a stabbing back pain, as though there was a knife in them. I had them repeatedly imagine they could reach back and take the knife out, and the pain went away. During a class, a woman complained of a pain in her knee that had been there for months, making it hard for her to walk. I asked her to imagine that an object was in her knee causing the pain, and to tell me what shape it was. She said it was like a wedge. I asked her to tell me how much it weighed, and she said 5 pounds. I asked her what color it was, and she said it was red. So I told her to imagine that she was reaching into her knee with her hand, taking out the 5-pound red wedge, and throwing it away. I had her do that 3 times in detail, and then asked her to get up and walk and tell me how she felt. She got up without pain and walked without pain for the first time in 3 months. In all of these cases, the pain or discomfort has not been suppressed. To suppress pain, you have to divert attention away from the pain through distracting activity or a mental process, use a drug that blocks awareness of the pain, or tense muscles so that you can't feel the pain. None of these changes the condition. On the other hand, symbolic imagination actually induces relaxation that allows the body to get on with healing. Healing by clouds of color. People who get involved with metaphysics soon learn of an imagination technique that is generally called something like the white light of protection. It consists of imagining that you are surrounded by a white light, or in some variations, a white cloud, a sort of energy shield, or a kind of mirror. Metaphysically, it is supposed to set up a high vibration around you that repels negativity. Practically, it lowers anxiety and stress to the degree that it makes you feel safer. However, its range of use is limited because all you can use it for is protection. When I was much younger, I learned a Hawaiian technique that I call clouds of color. Instead of protecting, however, these imaginary clouds that you put around yourself or around parts of your body are used for physical, emotional, and mental healing. There are two aspects to the technique, color and intent, and each draws upon memory associations to produce its effects. There are a lot of color systems in the world, and I'm not going to invent another one. If you have already learned a particular system of associating colors with specific qualities, and you like the system, you can apply it to this technique. But if not, or if you want to try something different, you can work with fundamentals that are not based on philosophy or culture. Basically, colors can be divided into warm or cool, bright or dim, and hard or soft. Red, orange, and yellow tend to be more stimulating physically, emotionally, and mentally. Green, blue, and violet tend to be more soothing in the same areas. Brighter colors are more stimulating. Dimmer colors are more soothing. Hard colors, that is, colors that are more pure, are also more stimulating, while soft colors, those that are mixed with a small amount of white, gray, or black, and which may be called muted, are more soothing. Mixing the preceding characteristics allows for a huge number of variations, but the main effects to remember and use are stimulating or soothing. Physical colors can produce these effects, and so can imagined ones. Intent, in this case, simply concerns imagining the specific healing effects that you want the imagined colors to have. Imagining yourself surrounded by a cloud of bright orange or yellow, with the intent that it should increase your strength and endurance, will help to produce that effect by stimulating physical processes in your body and evoking appropriate memories that will alter your behavior. Imagining a soft green or blue cloud in or around a part of your body which is swollen or infected, with the intent that it heal the condition, will help to reduce tension and mobilize the body's healing resources. Doing the same thing with the intent to heal any related emotional conflicts will help to resolve them without you having to understand them or even know what they are. You'll find that some cloud colors will help you reduce anger, and some will help to reduce fear. Some will help you to increase tolerance, and some can help to resolve confusion and doubt, all depending on your associations with the colors and the intentions you have. In short, you can use the colors in any way that you want, for any purpose that you want. Take advantage of your imagination and use it to get excellent healing results. As with all healing techniques, sometimes the effect will be immediate, and sometimes you'll have to keep it up, steadily or intermittently, until you get results. Touch is our third method of instant healing. It is good for your health to be touched. Being touched by another person produces more physiological, emotional, and mental changes in your body than input from any other sense. And unless you have mental or emotional resistance to that touch, those changes are always beneficial. Even when the touching seems superficial, the body-mind response can be significant. At a university in Florida, volunteers were brought in to gently stroke the skin of premature babies for 10 minutes a day, while a control group of babies was left untouched. The results showed that the stroked babies gained weight faster and were ready to be discharged days earlier than the babies that were not touched. An experiment carried out by UCLA researchers at the Santa Monica Library in Southern California consisted of having the person checking out the books contrive to make hand contact, however slight, with 100 people who were borrowing books, and then being careful to avoid contact with the next 100. Outside the library, students interviewed each person exiting to find out what they thought of the library's services. The overall satisfaction of the 100 who had been touched was dramatically higher than those who had not been touched. This was the case even though the touch was unobtrusive and had nothing to do with the services. That small human contact was enough to alter perception on a much larger scale. Strong responsiveness to touch is normal in human beings, but for a variety of reasons, some people grow up with a fear or dislike of it. Part of a person's response to touch draws from his cultural background. Northern Europeans and Northern Asians tend to severely limit touching in family groups and avoid it wherever possible among non-family members. When it can't be avoided, as on crowded trains, it is studiously ignored. Some people, such as the British and French, engage in ritual touching, such as the handshake or the shoulder grab with a quick peck or near peck on the cheeks. Other groups, such as the Japanese, avoid even that by substituting it with ritual bowing. However, even though the Japanese don't go in for public touching, they do have a strong cultural tradition of massage, which puts them way ahead of the British in the touching department. Compared to the British, Americans are touchy-feely fiends with their back-slapping, arm-grabbing, rough-hugging manners. But compared to the Italians, Americans are very stiff and reserved. Excluding those with severe mental disorders, all people will respond well to touching, even public touching, in the right circumstances. Quite intimate touching seems to be okay among athletes, for example, or touching a stranger while dancing is normal, and group sing-alongs often result in more physical contact than is usual in a crowd. I remember a workshop I led in Japan where the response really surprised me. Ordinarily, I end my workshops with people holding hands in a circle, and to finish, I have everyone hug the person on either side of them. I had ended this workshop with a circle, but I was going to end without the hugs out of deference to Japanese custom. However, my wife signaled me to go ahead with it, so I explained to the group that this was a Hawaiian custom and they had to do it as part of the workshop. They did it with a fervor and excitement that I couldn't believe. It was as if my giving permission to touch let loose a powerful force of suppressed inclination. They hugged on either side, they hugged across the room, and they hugged me over and over again. Apart from cultural resistance to touching and being touched, there is the resistance that comes from bad experiences. Unfortunately, it seems as though nearly every culture has people so selfish and cruel that they take advantage of positions of authority and responsibility to exploit the natural impulses of others to love and be loved. They do it for their own personal pleasure and without regard to the consequences for the other person's life.